Informative, interesting, intelligent. President and CEO with the Tucson Metropolitan Chamber, Amber Smith with News from the Chamber.
Hello, and welcome to the July edition of News from the Chamber. I am Amber Smith, President and CEO of the Tucson Metro Chamber, and of course, with me is my Vice President, Michael Guymond. We are sitting right here doing our podcast in the Business Radio X studio at Stuart Title on Broadway. So this month's conversation is going to focus on young professionals in Tucson, and that means all of you millennials out there. We know that Tucson is competing with other cities across the country to attract millennials, and we want to talk more about that. So with us today are different people working on different aspects of this very issue. So let me welcome Zach Yenser, the director of Tucson Young Professionals. Good afternoon, Zach.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Zach's very involved in the community, also as president of the Menlo Park Neighborhood Association, and he hosts his very own daily radio show, The Creative City, on 1030 The Voice. Certainly tune in for that at 9 a.m.
Thank you. 10 a.m.
10 a.m., yep. 10 to 12. Another millennial joining us today is Ms. Lindsay Welch. She is the president of the Tucson Metro Chamber's Emerging Leaders Council, while also professionally serving as vice president for community relations and business development for Crest Insurance. Plus, she is a recent recipient of the 40 Under 40 Award, more recently than myself, that received it too many years than I want to admit. So welcome, Lindsay.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for having me, Amber.
And lastly, rounding out our panel today is Ms. Randy Dorman. Randy is not a millennial, but she has been a leader in the community with a passion to grow our downtown and overall community to create an environment that screams vibrant city. Professionally, Randy is owner of R&R Development and has extensive experience in branding and marketing. And more importantly for this conversation, she was chair of the Tucson Downtown Partnership and currently running for City of Tucson Mayor. Good afternoon, Randy.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so very broad topic here. Where do we begin? I'm going to start with you, Randy, because you so clearly have a vision for Tucson, and you moved here 18 years ago from the East Coast. So tell us a little bit about your journey and how it's led to the leadership you've taken on in downtown.
It's funny, when I left New York, I said to my girlfriends, I'm moving to this new place. I'm concerned about making friends. One of them laughed at me and said, oh, please, before you know it, you'll be mayor. And that was that was 18 years ago. So you never know sometimes when people put things in the ether. But I moved from New York to downtown Tucson very specifically in 2001, because when I had been visiting while I was dating my husband, we would hang out in downtown, and there wasn't a lot going on. There were so many boarded up buildings and empty storefronts, and we really saw what could happen downtown and wanted to be a part of it. And a few months later, we bought an old ice factory with two friends on the edge of downtown and turned it into the Ice House Lofts, which was the first residential loft conversion in all of Arizona. And that project was really years ahead of downtown revitalization, but it showed people what was possible. And one of the very important reasons for the redevelopment of downtown was to keep our millennials here, our grads here, to keep businesses here, for there to be a thriving hub in the center of town. I had been president of the Museum of Contemporary Art for a long time, and that was another organization that I thought was really key in driving young people wanting to stay here. Contemporary art, art in general, is always on the forefront of change, especially social change, and I thought that small institution could grow and really be on the forefront of making the change here that we needed to be a thriving city. So it all really led me to running for mayor, because running for mayor is all about seeing what's possible, setting a vision, and collaborating with people to make that vision happen. And that's what I want to do for Tucson.
So when you moved here 18 years ago, how would you have described downtown?
It was funky and quirky, but a little desolate at the same time. And we had an office on Congress Street. you know, we had a lot of people doing untoward things in our storefront. And, you know, I partially loved it because of the bones of the building, the activity that was going on. I mean, there were so many people involved in trying to do great things downtown, revitalizing the Fox, the different festivals downtown. But it was really having a hard time getting traction, and it needed some more to really galvanize and move in a forward direction.
You know, Randy, all you could have really said to answer that was, it was the grill.
I loved the grill.
The only place in America mm-hmm. that you could get a bowl of Captain Crunch cereal at 3 o'clock in the morning.
It was the
tater. That was downtown 18 years ago.
It's true. And it was the tater tots that really drew me.
Too.
Our office was right next door to the grill. And, oh, I loved it.
So then, Lindsay.
Yes.
You are our newest Tucsonan resident around this table.
Right.
How would you describe downtown now compared to Randy's impression 18 years ago?
So it's interesting. I got here 6 years ago, a little kicking and screaming involved because my husband was military and he was like, here are our choices. Pick your poison of D.C., Hawaii, which sounds glamorous, but Schofield Barracks is not that glamorous when you've been there before, or Arizona. And I'm like, I am not going back there. So we live in Vail, so we're on the skirts, but I'm like, Tucson was the place where I felt like I could work. And mm-hmm. so coming here, there was tons of construction happening 6 years ago downtown. And our neighbors were like, oh, Tucson, we're really working. I was right before the streetcar was coming in. So it was on the dawn of all of this development downtown. And they were like, you would not have wanted to come down here. My husband had done a lot of training during his military experience. And he was like, it was a little bit unsavory down here when I was coming for training. So now it's like I've seen this chrysalis of downtown where for me, I'm like, oh, yeah, when people come, I'm like, you should come down here. It's so great. But I wasn't a part of that process. It was just here. So there's a little bit of taking that for granted to think, oh, it's just downtown. It's different from cute because I have a kid in college in Texas where they have the squares and that's adorable and all the fun places to eat and all of that. It's not so cute. It's a little more metropolitan feeling compared to some of the places where we're from back home. And home for us is Texas. But I think it is a good place. I mean, it's where we want to be. And for us, we don't mind the drive. I mean, because we're in Vail in great schools, we zip on I-10. And so we love that. And we work in the city, we're in town. And so people are like, oh my gosh, it's very far, but it doesn't seem far for us.
So, and giving some context to that drive for our listeners, for those that might not be in Tucson, when Lindsay talks about Vail and Tucson, we're talking a 25-minute drive.
Right. I mean, for me, when you're looking at that, that's not a big deal.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And that's my point is that I'm 25 minutes from downtown, the other direction on 4 acres.
Right.
And then you have the metropolis in
I
the
think
middle.
The convenience, Tucson has this reputation of being a cute little town, but it really is a city. So when people are looking at this area and looking to be, it's not a cute little town. It's not a concrete jungle. It really has a grit and culture. It is the Austin of Arizona for people who are looking at this area. It is this place where you feel like there is opportunity, there is job, it is meaningful, but it's not, you know, we use the phrase JV in our house because we're big sports people. It's not this JV place. It's established and professional. And we've even talked to several people that have been in the community that have moved out of the community. And they're like, man, I really miss it because I felt like I made a difference in that community when I was there. And I'm like, oh my gosh, we miss you. We wish you were here. And they're like, we don't hear that when we've moved on thinking we were moving on and moving up, that we miss that we made a difference where we were and there was opportunity there and there's some regret in moving out. So I think it's a great place.
And something you said, Lindsay, was that you felt that Arizona, you'd be able to find a job. So, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, for me, it's funny. I mean, I've done a lot in city business here. I came here. There's this running. Sometimes it's a little bit of a joke that I kind of am like, oh, I'm the trailing spouse. I mean, I came here kicking and screaming, like I say, like, oh, gosh, I'm going here. without a job. But I'm the reason that we've stayed here is because I found my job. And so for my husband retiring from the military, he has a job because of the connections that I've made here in the community and because I got well-rooted and established and found a place. And so that's why we're here. And so I think finding employment here and my own professional journey and finding a seat at the table and being plugged in at the chamber and sitting in the role of president for ELC, all of those things I've done, it wasn't hard for me to find a job. I'm a big believer in TED Talks. I love that. And there's a How to Start a Momentum TED Talk that if you haven't watched, you should watch. And it's awesome because in that it talks about I had a first follower. I had this established professional in the community that was like, I get this crazy nut that's here and I'm on her team and meet my people. And once I had that believer, people were awesome to say, you should know her and you should see her, and recruited me to be a part of their organizations. And that's established me in the in my role professionally here. So I think it's a great place to be. It's where we've chosen. We could have chosen anywhere and we've chosen to be here. So
let's transition to Zach. How do you as the director for Tucson Young Professionals reach out to new young professionals entering into the community, like when Lindsay came in town?
Yeah, you know, that's something that we're always working to do. And one of the ways that we're standing that up is within the last year, we've begun working more closely with corporate partners, with enterprises and organizations, and saying, look, we are a pipeline from your organization out into the community, and you don't have to do the work. That if you want to retain your young workforce and your young talent as they come in, we can be that connecting point to the overall community. And so I think our work with companies and organizations and enterprises is really important. The other thing, back to Lindsay's point, which has probably been the right answer the longest, has been word of mouth, that Tucson is this really connected community. One of the things that I think Tucson should sell is that the barrier to entry is much lower here than it would be in another community. So for example, like Lindsay said, once you know 5 or 10 people, and those 5 or 10 people are themselves connected into their own networks, then new folks who come into Tucson are connected in pretty quick. And so TYP as an organization is working to do a better job institutionally of that. But organically through our people, it's been happening because Tucson is so tied in. And so if you have a big idea in Tucson, or you have something that you want to start, or you have something that you want to do, it might take you, and I'm just making numbers up, but you'll get the metaphor. It might take you a year in Atlanta, a year in Austin, a year in Portland. You can do that in 2 or 3 months here in Tucson. We don't sell that enough. And I think that's how it's worked within Tucson Young Professionals. And it's also where we're going as an organization as well.
There is incredible accessibility. And we always joke that it's 1 degree of separation here. There are very few communities like that. And as soon as you find somebody, you'll find somebody else and somebody else. And it is really remarkable.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've almost wondered, you know, I'm really involved with the startup and entrepreneurship community, which I think has been something that I really appreciate the chamber for, of really supporting that. Thank you, Amber. That's very much to your credit, I would say. But if we had everything that we want right now as a community, if we had all the funding, if we had all the critical mass of talent and ideas, if we had everything we thought we needed, you'd have that critical mass, but you'd also have more layers to cut through. And so I've often wondered, in terms of branding Tucson, to Randy's point, to Lindsay's point, if we were to say, look, we know we don't have all the layers. That's the point, is that we're effective at that quick launch, quick start. Your big idea lives here in Tucson because of that, because of our connection, our community. Let's sell that. And as a young professional, I see that. I see that so clearly. I wrote for Biz Tucson a few years ago when Tucson was a top 5 city for millennials. And I said, the asset we have is that we are an intergenerational community, that the younger and the elder have way less separation than in other communities. I've always found this community to be one where the older generation reaches back and supports and launches the younger generation. We need to talk about that because it's happening. And it's a lot of the reason why I'm here today. So.
That's interesting, because I had a comment on here, a question statement I wanted to make, was how important is the role of mentorship. And Lindsay alluded to that as well with that one person that brought her under her wing. And now Lindsay serves as chair of Emerging Leaders Council, ELC, which has a strong mentorship program. So how did that apply either in being mentored or in being a mentor?
So it's interesting you bring that up, Amber, because at the time when ELC was established as a chamber, there was no other program like that. I mean, I've been a part of many leadership programs that do tend to collaborate, Greater Tucson Leadership, a lot of these other programs that do great things and hone in on the leadership component. But the mentorship component that was brought into Emerging Leaders Council was unique and has been sustainable. And so coming in, There is a component of that where they are taking established business people in the community that have a willingness to share their experience with this group. And so I kind of straddle that fence. I'm more on that Gen X side where we started on analog. And so I still have this need to write everything down. I'm like right under that radar of being turned out to pasture from the ELC because that 40-year cutoff is like looking me in the face.
TYP is 45. So I know, you have a home.
Thanks. As I get turned out, I'm still in that young professional
I do
group.
Love that that is still the bar because even I can fit in.
Right.
That.
See?
Oh, we're so I can't.
21 to 45?
So, I am on
see?
Yeah. See? Don't look so shocked.
I'm not shocked. Room. No, the thought that I had when we started 15 minutes ago was, Amber's a young professional. She just doesn't know it yet.
Right? Right? It's only, you're only as old as you feel.
Honestly,
no,
that was my
a
thought.
Young professional. So am I technically, by the way, but yeah. In August, I will be termed out.
Yeah, see? Get in while you can, Guyman.
I'm firmly a Gen X.
See? So, but as I said, that first year I got paired with my mentor. My mentor was Howard Stewart, who we all have tremendous respect for.
Great sure. Mentor.
I had lunch with Howard today, and I tell this loving story about Howard. I was just assigned my mentor, and I say this to Howard often. I'm like, I'm sure you were like, oh no, Lindsay Welch was my mentee. Like, we could not
you
be
probably
more...
exhaust him.
I'm sure I do. He didn't have daughters. He's not socially wired. I'm sure he was like, dang it, I got that one. poor Howard. I mean, but it was so good for both of us, I think, in some ways, because it was like a marriage. Like, you're just in it, like betrothed to Howard for a year. So but he taught me so many things that I had to work at that relationship. I had to learn how to communicate with someone who wasn't socially driven. He's so generous and committed to this community. And I just learned so much from him that I would never have gotten if we hadn't been committed to the program. And his commitment level and my commitment level is where we shared. And so then the second year, I was paired with Tammy Burns from Agape Hospice and Palliative Care, and which was great because I learned about females in business, and she'd built this great sustainable business model. And so that was great. Then Leah Marquez Peterson was my next mentor. And so I did that. I was on the journey while she ran for office. And so was a part of that. And then this last year, Christy Street. So I've had these all-star mentors that have given me little pieces. I mean, aside from the fact that because I sat on the mentorship pairing committee, I had access to every mentor. So I think I started my journey in my professional life very young, and I had no pride about asking. There was no reservation about asking, how did you get to where you are? And I think sometimes there's this, for some people, there's this like, how do I get there? And the military probably taught that because we were dumped in a place where we didn't know anyone. And I was like, where's the grocery store? Who cuts your hair? Who's your doctor? Who's your dentist? Those questions I learned to do. I think that the ELC is unique in that it allows us to just, you're in a relationship to learn. And I think that that's, we share that. Zach and I have partnered in some recent initiatives to say, let's not duplicate, but let's collaborate and let's figure out where we can not overstep, but how can we hold hands to fill in the gaps? And I think that's really great about what we're learning to do in this new movement of where do our strengths link up and where can we fill in the gaps?
And with mentorships, I mean, you learn on both sides because the mentor learns from the mentee as well. It's so important. I had incredible mentors as I started working, and I'm still close to them. They've supported my campaign. They're, you know, cheer me on all the time. And they said, you know, we knew from the beginning you could do something like this. But especially as a businesswoman, it was incredibly important to have women as mentors, navigating the business world, especially in the late 80s and the early 90s, especially in advertising. While it was not exactly Mad Men, it was not that far away either. Mm-hmm. And so mentorships are so important.
So Randy, and by the way, we are going to consider you a young professional.
Thank you. So, I'm young at heart.
You are definitely young at heart professional.
I've seen you sing on stage and dance. Definitely young at heart.
I can still do a back handspring, so I'm okay.
I saw that too, that video.
Impressive. So Lindsay talked about her mentor specifically. I mean, would you be willing to talk about yours specifically? And I'm interested to find out if you found Tucson to be maybe more accepting than you thought it would be, or if it was as accepting as you thought it might be when you moved here.
So Tucson was incredibly accepting. What was challenging for me was there was no business opportunity for me. My job did not exist here. I did global branding, and there were I worked for an agency that did global branding for different companies. I managed our global Procter & Gamble business. There was nothing remotely similar here. And so my first 2 years here, I had to commute back to New York to work. And but in that time, we bought the ice house, and my husband's an architect, I shifted into real estate. I had to completely reinvent myself professionally here and reinvent myself from a career I loved and was at the peak in. But I also had the opportunity to do that here. This is a town where you absolutely can do that. You have the room to do that. You know, in New York, if you miss a couple of months of working, you're really in trouble. And here you have the cost of living affords a little more flexibility to experiment professionally. There are very few places like that. I think that's one of the things that make it a particularly good place for startups, that flexibility. And people were so accepting, not of the concept of the ice house. Literally, almost everyone told us we were crazy, we were going to lose everything. Why were we doing that? Nobody wanted to live downtown. Nobody wanted to live in an old ice factory, like literally to the person. And but we were confident in what we could do, and we were confident that once people saw it, they would want it. So it has been incredibly accepting, but there's also been a lot of challenges, especially professionally. And I'd really like to continue to change that. I think it has evolved tremendously. But the biggest hurdle here is that there isn't enough professional opportunity, not just for young people, but for everybody and at all income levels. I mean, we have an incredibly high rate of poverty here. And given how talented our people are, how many resources that are here, it's unacceptable that we still have, you know, almost a 20% poverty rate. Mm-hmm. We can change that. We need to make Tucson a better place to do business, a place with more business opportunity. You know, Lindsay, I'm so glad that you were able to find something so quickly and something that suits you so well. But so many people can't. They don't have the skills for it. And there are all these great things happening, like the job training programs that are finally being connected to the businesses who need them so people can be reskilled and upskilled. That is so important, but that is recent. We have to keep building on it.
And that right there parlays exactly into an initiative that the Chamber has been working on about a year. And we are going to be full speed ahead by around the first of the year. And it's exactly right to your point right there, which is finding those opportunities. So we're going to be launching Tucson Pipeline, which we've secured funding for the community for over 3 years. And it will connect the employers to the talent, to the job trainers. So it'll do a whole skills assessment of that talent, regardless of what level they are, C-level executive, a veteran, active duty, all the way down, and then being able to match them to employers' needs based on those skills. And more importantly, identifying what those gaps are and driving you rather than saying, okay, you're 30% matched to this career and putting a period on it, it puts the comma. And we'll identify the Pima Community College, this certification, U of A, this degree, or job path, this program that can help you finesse those skills.
That's great.
And so we're really excited to be that connector on that end, because you're right. When I look around, it's really what drove so much energy to this initiative, because there are phenomenal things happening all around the community in different ways. You have the Howard Stewarts of the world from AGM that have their tuition reimbursement program, right, trying to promote that across all employers. But then our nonprofit community is incredibly strong as well. We have Earned Learn helping, you know, the underserved be able to get those dollars to be able to go to college. And then look at the new renaissance of Pima Community College as well.
Right.
And they are connecting to industry and businesses more than I would argue ever, and really standing up programs and being nimble, you know, when employers like Caterpillar come in. So we're excited at the Chamber to be leading that effort, which is really just built on collaboration with other entities doing fantastic work. We're just going to be the enabling tool to bring that together. So hopefully it can solve that issue. And if you want to take another step further to that point of, again, we're talking about recruiting talent here. Is with this platform, we can look at the back end and see what skills are we building in the community and what skills do employers need. Right. So then we can start adjusting curriculum or start targeting areas. Say, I'll go easy, engineering. And this is an obvious one. Say we aren't creating enough engineers, which we aren't. We already know that because of the number of job openings between Ventana and Raytheon, et cetera. Then we can target UT, right, which is, or even A&M, 20,000 engineers a year. So we want to be able to have that right data to be able to then target the right kind of talent to bring in or grow the talent that we have.
I think one thing I've seen the Chamber do since Amber has come in that I really appreciate is the collaboration piece of recognizing we have people in our backyard that we really have underestimated, especially with Davis Mothen and Fort Huachuca being here. I mean, that's near and dear because that's our life and that's what brought us here. But I think, I have seen her reach out to organizations where she's extended a hand across the table to say, hey, you know, how can we collaborate with Startup Tucson, with other with the Chamber Alliance, with all these other efforts to say, hey, let's see how we can work together and collaborate. I think that's a better solution than can we talk about how we differentiate. I think the conversation for a long time has been what differentiates us. And I think maybe what are our similarities and what are we doing well? And let's talk about where we can stand united and let's celebrate what we're doing right. I mean, we do have some great treasures here that we don't talk enough about because we're so busy focusing on where we need to get better that we underestimate what we are doing really well. And I think the Vail School District, I mean, that was we were willing to have my husband drive to Sierra Vista initially and then spend his time split because we knew it was a hidden treasure to have such a great school district. So I think, you know, Basis is a great school district. There are great school districts that we do have that we should be celebrating. And we do have Davis Mothen, which is great. And we do have people who are transitioning from the military that we could be recruiting and retaining here that we aren't necessarily doing that before now. And so I appreciate that conversation that we are looking at our veterans and looking at people here, looking at trade schools and looking at opportunities to plug in talent. Because college isn't the only path for everyone.
Well, only 20% of future careers are going to require a traditional four-year college degree.
Right.
Not to say that the university system is going to become dormant or unnecessary, but we all have to start evolving and adapting to what those needs are.
Right. And we can start in high school. I mean, one of the things that I'd like to do is give a library card to both the Pima Community College libraries and the U of A libraries to every high school junior and senior so that first they have access to those resources, but they also start to socialize some kind of additional education. I think it could be a great pathway to that.
Well, I would even add to that. I was part of Pima Community College's Futures Summit, I guess it was, and they talked a lot about the library system. Is now, as libraries, everything's gone digital. Not everything, but so much has gone digital. What other opportunities are there for those physical structures? And as partnerships between the college, the county library system, and the university, mm-hmm. and there's bound to be some formalized alliance in there that you could tie in childcare.
Right.
You know, one of those if I were a queen for a day ideas.
Right.
So, Lynn, let's go back to what you said, all of the strengths that we don't talk enough about. for all of you, what would you say are some of the undervalued strengths of our community? Zach?
Undervalued, not to be boring, but I think the intergenerational possibilities. I think that ability to launch a big idea quickly here in a way that we don't talk about is an underestimated benefit.
Lens?
You know, it's interesting because I think we celebrate the fact that there are a lot of things to do here. I mean, we have Old Tucson Studios, we have the Rialto, we have great music, we have this culture, there's art, there's we have great weather so we can be outside, there's hiking and biking. And I just think that, you know, we have so many friends from all over because of our military career. And they're like, you guys are always doing something. It looks like every day you're doing something fun. And it feels like there's a way to be active and be doing something all the time. And so it's not just that we're coming here. I think Visit Tucson does a fantastic job of getting people to come and visit, but it doesn't have to be a place that you just visit. It's a place where you can go to work and then still have time and daylight to really have a great life here. And so I think that we should celebrate that it's not just a destination or a staycation, but really you still do the average, go to the grocery store and do school and do homework, but you still have an opportunity to really have an active life here and be involved. And I think that's something to celebrate.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, Lindsay, because sometimes I will get the occasional, maybe young person, but also someone, you know, a little bit older, saying, gosh, I wish there was just more to do here. And I don't want to be a jerk, because the jerk response would be, you know what, that's on you.
Right.
If, I mean, you're talking about there's so much to do here, and you're right.
Right.
But, you know, we still have a lot of people who just kind of throw up their hands and say, gosh, I just wish there was more to do here. You know, they look at places like Phoenix up the road and, you know, you have all these different sports options, which we, of course, have. You just, you know, they're there.
Right.
Like you said, I agree with you. There's a lot to do here.
I mean, remember when I started?
I was totally going to go there.
So, I don't know, maybe years ago, what happened was, we were so involved in downtown and in Mocha, and, you know, we were out and doing all these great things all the time. We were having so much fun. And still, people around the city were like, oh, there's nothing going on. There's nothing going on. So I started an email, called it Randy's Picks. I sent it to 25 of my friends every week with all the things going on downtown with a focus on the arts. And then they would send it to friends and I would get requests. Could you send it to me too? And it grew and it grew and it grew to almost 1,000 people. And my husband made a nice jingle for me and it became for years, you know, a weekly email where it was a curated list of, you know, the really interesting things to do downtown and in the arts. And I had a radio show on KXCI as well to really showcase all the incredible things going on downtown in the arts. And what's interesting is I think that when we do promote ourselves, I mean, we do promote ourselves with cultural amenities, but what we have not done is really leverage the arts community as an economic driver. And the arts, we have the best arts leadership that we've ever had in Tucson right now across all fronts. And the amount of money that is generated in the arts, spent in the arts, and almost all of it stays in Tucson. About 6 years ago, there was a National Endowment of the Arts study that said that the arts here generate about $100 million of economic impact, which was just under what the GEM show was at the time. And since then, we've just grown. But if you think about our institutions, I mean, Mocha is now a world-class institution. Tucson Museum of Art has been doing incredible work. The Symphony, Arizona Theater Company, the Center for Creative Photography. I mean, those are world-class institutions right here that we don't celebrate enough. And then the festivals and like the All Souls procession,
right.
People mm-hmm. fly in from all over the world
to participate.
To experience this procession that started, you know, when I started marching in it with my daughter, there were just a few hundred people.
Right.
It's extraordinary, and it's something truly unique to Tucson.
Well, and you touched on festivals right there. We have one almost every single weekend. And even if it's not during the weekend, we have, if you laid it out to where there was no overlap, you could have one every single weekend.
I mean, not even just festivals, but like even the nonprofit events that you can go to, like the putting on the dog gala for the Humane Society that's outside, or you can go to the Rialto and have a disco party, or you can go to, you can get fancy and put on your tux and be at one of the many. I mean, there's so many things to do that benefit our community, that provide necessary social service that we need here, that allow you to be plugged in and be active and to celebrate being with me. And we have zip lines and we have bike rides and we have, I mean, there's just a million things to do that I mean, we just did a family road trip to visit this legacy trip to visit our family in Texas. I mean, we're in Amarillo, Texas and Lubbock, Texas. I'm like, what do you do here? Like I lived there my whole life and I'm thinking like, well, we are in this great place. Of course we love being in Tucson. We've chosen to be here. And it blows my mind that you hear that still, Michael, because that's so disappointing because we have so many things that we can be doing that people come here to do. So,
well, but the key there, and you've touched on it, is the diversity.
Right.
So Randy talked a lot about the arts. You talked about, you know, other festivals or galas or things that you can do outside.
And the natural stuff. Yeah.
And the natural stuff. We can't expect, you know, everyone in Tucson to be driven toward a gala. They
right.
may not either
Absolutely.
Be able to afford it or it's just not their thing.
Right.
So it's really also providing that diverse mix of things to do. Do we do that okay? I mean, we've talked a little bit about it, but could we do better in that area?
I mean, we have cuisine and we have music and we have hiking trails. I just think we do. We have something for everyone here. And I think
where you can do you.
Right. Right.
So then what are our biggest challenges? So we know that we have the high points, is that we have the diversity, we have the unique culture, we have a ton of things to do. What's on the other side of that?
I think our biggest challenges are economic opportunity, planning the growth that is happening and balancing that with still making sure that we protect our neighborhoods and our character and our culture. And also, we have a big challenge with sustainability in the desert. So those are my top three.
Lynn's.
I agree. I think sometimes I heard an analogy one time from one of our business leaders that said Tucson is all singing. We're a choir and we're singing from the same page of music, but we're not on the same key. And I agree with that. I think there's a lot of people singing very loudly, but we're not singing from the same key, and it's not necessarily a beautiful song. I think we need to celebrate what we can get on the same page for, and I think we'd make a lot more impact if we would try to focus on what we can do together and celebrate victories in small spaces in areas where we can be on the same page. And I think when it comes to business or in social impact, I think those are areas where we need to work for the advocacy of those, especially those that are underserved, whether it be the elderly or the impoverished or our children.
Zach?
I would say housing. If you make under $70,000 to $80,000 a year in Tucson, housing is not affordable for you. And right now, because of what's happening downtown, the downtown barrios get a lot of press, but what people aren't talking about is if housing is hard to stay in, it also means it's hard to get into. And I think the story under the surface is just what I started with, is if you are making under $80,000 a year in Tucson, it's really hard to get into a home anywhere in the city, and it's pretty staggering. And we're at a tipping point there, I think.
Well, it's really interesting you say that, Zach. I was going to bring this up. Sybil Francis, who's the executive director of the Center for the Future of Arizona, who has done a lot of work in and around looking at issues that face Arizona. How are we going to grow? How are we going to face a lot of these challenges? And she recently wrote an opinion piece for the Arizona Republic. And she the question came up, why are millennials leaving Arizona? And she pointed to the three things: affordable housing, which Zach mentioned, career mobility, which we've kind of touched on, and a strong education system, which we really haven't gotten into. I mean, Amber has talked about the great things that Pima Community College is doing to try to address that. But, you know, from a statewide perspective, that's still obviously a challenge. So I would ask you guys, you know, is that something you agree with?
So housing affordability is why millennials are leaving anywhere around the country. So Politico a couple years ago, and I'll keep this super short, Politico a couple years ago in their What Works magazine series, they polled 50 mayors from around the country. And they said, what is the one thing that you promote the most about your city, right? So the majority of these mayors said that 85%, so that engaging millennials in their city was one of their top 10 or top 5 priorities. So much so that they actually created departments around it. Some cities have actually created departments just to engage young professionals, which I think is over the top, but it's happening. And they said, what do you pitch the most about your city? They said arts and culture. But when they asked what's the biggest detriment to actually getting millennials to come and stay, the majority said housing. I mean, I can't tell you how much this is popping up around the country. In fact, Arizona is going to benefit from other places around the country where it's unaffordable to live. And I think if I can just plug this, Tucson's median hourly wage is 8% below the rest of the country. Our cost of living is 4% less. So I think our narrative is starting to shift under our feet.
Yeah.
And I think we got to realize it and tackle it head on and make sure that we're up to date with our narrative about the city, because I think the tides are shifting as we grow. It's an indication that we are growing well in many areas, but it means we have to adapt our story and our efforts with it, or we're going to get left behind. And I think housing more than anything demonstrates that shift.
Well, and I'm going to turn it over to the development expert at the table, Randy. But when I look at those numbers of the 4% and 8%, I would argue that housing is where it should be. I mean, because we have so much diversity in housing. And yes, the median income, but I think housing costs are where they should be, but wages are where they're not. And that's where if we could be able to grow individuals more to where when I talk to, you know, Habitat for Humanity says two people can work two full-time jobs and still not be able to afford a two-bedroom. So I don't think it's the cost of our housing, but I definitely think that it's our low wages. And I'll credit Dr. Ian Wark of Pima Community College, the VP of Workforce Development, with his saying about the lost generation. Because Pima is seeing so many students come in at the age of like 28. Well, what happened from high school to that point? And that's where the opportunity really is to be able to grow talent and individuals to truly reduce poverty.
Completely agree.
And also with the student, with the debt that students have, and then to have that on top of high housing costs.
Right.
So, I mean, regarding, is it housing costs? Is it wages? It is both. I mean, it is 100% both. And I think there is a real opportunity to grow our economy and create more better paying jobs here at all levels. That is what I'm laser focused on. But I've also been really interested in how do we help, especially around downtown where there has been investment that has created some displacement and has really a need for more affordable, whether it be low income or workforce housing, but that has to be developed. It doesn't happen on its own, and you can't just say, we're going to require every development to have that. That is irresponsible to say. That's not how business works. It's truly irresponsible to say, and another candidate said that, like, you could just make that happen without understanding the dynamics behind it. But we can create dedicated funding sources for affordable and workforce housing. There had been good funding for low-income housing, especially around the streetcar and other transportation zones. A lot of that has dwindled, but we have the tools at our disposal to create funding sources to make housing more affordable. We have to decide where and when to do that. And at the same time, we should be working to make this a place where you can have a career and your job can afford you the lifestyle that you would like. That's what I'm focused on.
Can I jump in for 15 seconds there, mm-hmm. if that's okay? The Indianapolis story is interesting because they checked all the boxes around city development and growth. They brought in a brand new healthcare sector and economy after the Great Recession. They just were checking all the boxes. What they found, though, is that wages didn't keep up. And so there's this interesting situation that happens where you got all these downtown jobs filled by workers who can't afford to live downtown. And so they're in effect being sent 30 minutes up the highway. Lindsay, I respect the heck out of you for doing that, but a lot of young professionals don't want to do that and are leaving cities. The great exodus out of cities is because of this. And then they're finding traffic just got worse. Infrastructure is breaking down. Public services don't go as far as they did. And so even though I live in a barrio, this is the other side of the coin I'm trying to get to, is that there are major costs to cities that don't figure out this balance of housing because mm-hmm. it's a workforce issue.
Right.
And it's a workforce development issue. And no one talks about it because it's more trendy to talk about the lower income side. And I'll talk about that all day. But there's a major economic piece of this that no one talks about until it's too late. And so I'm with Amber and Randy that I think it's a wage thing and it's also an incentivizing thing because the market right now is luxury heavy. It's not workforce heavy. And I don't know why that is, but
it's really a function of the cost of construction, the cost of land.
Well, and I'll also dovetail on back to Michael's point about the education system. For me, the drive was worth it because I knew that my children had to have a good education system. And so the draw was to put my kids in a school district. I came here with children. So it's different when you're looking at millennials who haven't yet started their family and that type of house they're looking for, and that question about school districts is not necessarily a part of their conversation initially. It's about, I'll worry about that when I get to that at that point. But for me, it was a different part of that conversation. To me, it was worth the drive. And so I think we have to tackle all of those things as well. And Tucson does have a challenge in our school district in the city, and TUSD is working on that. But in the city, we are a part of TUSD, and school choice is a challenge, especially if you're downtown. And so I think we have to address that. We all have to work in concert, and that's what I'm talking about as far as working collaboratively. We can't just address one issue because we have something else falling. It's like that spinning plate analogy. We're spinning one plate and then we're trying to get to the other, and we have plates that are falling because we're not addressing them all. And I think the education component is a critical piece of that when it comes to the wages. We see that if we're not addressing early childhood, then we have a problem with domestic violence and criminal issues, and all of those things are a piece of that. So I think the education piece is a critical piece of that as far as jobs and all of those things as well.
Speaking of spinning plates, I'm sure Amber is loving this conversation because she loves lots of spinning plates going on and trying to solve all these issues. So
we're going to solve it all right here.
Yeah, her head is spinning right now. I just know this about her.
I have this idea and vision. So specific to attracting and retaining young professionals, mm-hmm. what's our biggest asset?
I think that in particular, in my capacity with ELC, it's a really sweet spot because I think that the room for ELC is really not entry-level career people. It's really the type of people that business is really wanting to attract and retain. It's people that are mid to senior level career where they're really in the, they're starting to approach that high wage position, and they've established a skill set that makes them wanting to be in senior level management positions. And so I think that that's a very valuable room, a very sought after room, because the peer mentorship that comes from the people that you're sitting with, that you're learning from, the mentorship that comes from people outside of the room that want to pass the torch and share with their knowledge as they're in the twilight of their career, but also for us to start to share that information with people that are wanting to be at that table. So it's a really valuable room. There's a high level of demand. And I think for us to be able to collaborate and share that message of what is keeping us here and how we got to where we are and what we're looking for as we continue to develop is an important message to share, both with those people that are looking to hire. We've seen lots of success stories of people who've come into that room and have continued to take the next step in their career, and then sharing those successes in our community to say, hey, I came here feeling really good about where I am and I'm continuing to progress. I think we need to highlight that. And then And I think giving people the opportunity to sit at that table. So I think that that message needs to be highlighted and shared. And then also that information should be shared downward from the mentorship in that room can be shared for people that are looking to grow into those positions.
Randy, what asset do we have specific to retaining and recruiting millennials?
Well, I mean, the reason that we spent so much time working on downtown was really to create a place where people, especially millennials, would want to live, work, and play. And so it's really important that we keep it that way. Downtowns are important for so many reasons, I mean, including millennials, but also just the random interactions, the shared ideas that happen that way. Also, when you have a downtown where people are commingling with people who may not be like themselves, it fosters diversity, which you don't get when you're in a car. So, you know, there's been a lot of talk because of some of the displacement issues around downtown that downtown's developed enough, and that could not be farther from the truth. We're maybe a third of the way where we need to be. And if anyone has actually experienced a real vibrant downtown, they would understand that our current downtown is not sustainable. We need a lot more housing to support a thriving retail environment. We need home ownership options, but really we need more people living downtown
living.
And around downtown so that we can have retail that is more than just bars and restaurants, and then offices will want to be there as well. But I really think downtown residential is the driver, so we need to really figure out how to make housing that can work for millennials in and around downtown.
Well, and I think millennials also are looking for, you know, healthy lifestyles. You know, the fact that you can, you know, bicycle everywhere. We have the loop that completely connects our city that anyone can take advantage of, as well as we have bike boulevards. And so I think that those are some little nuances that we have unique to Tucson as well that's a good attractor for those. Michael?
Zach,
the same question.
Same question.
So a few years ago, Quicken Loans in Detroit was in the suburbs and they had to expand. And CEO Dan Gilbert said, well, we can go further out or we can move into the downtown. And downtown Detroit a few years ago was not a fantastic place.
I was there.
Me too.
And so he decided to move into downtown. And as he got his company Quicken and other companies into the downtown, he launched an internship program. And he pitched it and said, look, you can go to LA, you can go to Portland, you can go to Atlanta, or you can spend your summer in a city on the rise, a city that stories at a tipping point, a city where you can be a part of its renaissance, where you can be a part of its fabric. You can say, I was there when it was developing, when it was changing, when it was morphing, when it was going to its next chapter. You can be a part of that for your summer. He turned away tens of thousands of internship applications. And I think that's Tucson's asset that we're not leaning into, is that you can go to Detroit now, you can go to LA, you can go to Portland, you can go to Boston, or you can be a part of a city that's in its next stage, and you can say, I was there when it happened, and I was a part of it, and I was a part of its fabric and a part of its next stage. That's an asset that I think that Tucson has that other places don't, and it's really invigorating. It's a pioneer city.
I want to focus a little bit more maybe on the career mobility aspect of it. I think that, you know, now that we have over the last 5 years been doing a much better job of attracting more high-tech, high-wage jobs, obviously with Caterpillar, the Raytheon expansion, I mean, those are things that I think, and we touched on it a little bit in terms of the, you know, millennials wanting to make sure that they can see a career, right? It's not just a job today, it's a job for the long term. And the more that we bring in those opportunities that provide those true careers, I think we'll be in a much better spot. I mean, for so long, Tucson was just kind of pegged with the, what term am I looking for? Kind of the place where call centers lived. And we still have a lot of call centers here. I mean, we have 16 or 17,000 people working here in the call center industry. And that has improved in terms of call centers realizing that in order to retain talent, especially in a very tight market like we have, they're going to have to provide higher wages, and they're starting to do that. But that only gets them to a certain point, right. And there's still not necessarily a career track in that, except for a few. And so I think it really gets down to, you know, making sure that we continue to do the work that we're doing that has been attracting those high-tech, high-wage that provide more of that career track.
Well, really what we need to do, we need to be doing much better, because still a lot of people come here just for a job and really don't have a career opportunity. So we have to very consciously choose some ecosystems of industry and foster them so that we bring in those companies, or we grow those companies in those ecosystems. And those ecosystems will foster competition and innovation, but it will enable people to come here and or be here and have a career and not just a job, because there will be multiple companies in those ecosystems. I think we have to do it very purposefully, and we have to do it much more than we are now.
And I think that it doesn't necessarily have to be limited to, I mean, if you look at the traditional, I work in this industry and I've worked in this industry for 50 years and then I retired in this industry, the millennial doesn't think like that anymore. It's like, I did this and then I did this and then I changed and I did this totally different career because I got bored with that and now I did this. Like, I think they have to see a lifestyle of, I made good money. I had an awesome house. I took great trips. I made great memories and it was awesome. Like, it was an adventure and it's all on my story if you look at it. That's what they care about. I mean, so I think it's less about, I think it doesn't have to be so linear. And I think we have to think outside of the box and create the lifestyle that they're looking for and be able to give them the opportunity and the experience, and stop limiting ourselves to that there's this one path and this one tunnel to what that looks like, and be open to the idea that there's opportunity here and that there's tons of opportunity and that it's not just siloed into one way. And I think that as long as we continue to celebrate that there's lots of opportunity, we'll continue to bring those people here because they want to be a part of that.
Well, and that's one thing that we probably don't have enough time to get into, but that is something that Amber and I are trying to tackle with the Eller College, with some of the other colleges, to from a micro standpoint, get those students interested and knowledgeable of the type of opportunities that exist here, because right now a lot of them don't. We did a project with the Eller College with about 30 students. They looked at some things and made some recommendations based on, you know, what we can do here in our community to retain them. They were pretty excited about things here, but we also set up a meet and greet with the folks at Hexagon. So these cohort of students went to Hexagon. They came out of that not only saying, wow, I had no idea this opportunity existed, this is such a cool place to work. Not only is it a cool, like what they do is cool, but the space itself is really cool. And they had no idea. And they made a beeline for the executives in the room to say, how can I intern here?
That's right. It's the experience.
And so opening more of those doors, I think, is, and again, that's something that Amber and I are working on with some of these colleges, but opening some of those doors, I think, will help as well.
Mm-hmm. Zach?
Well, this was behind TYP Visits, a new program that TYP, Tucson Young Professionals, just stood up. And that is, there is so much value in getting, you know, young professionals both, you know, starting to exit college and all the way up through 45, to walk through the new El Rio Cherry Bell, to walk through Hexagon, to walk through the new tower at Banner, to really see what's going on in the city and to kind of tactilely sense it and smell it and see it and be there. It's huge to say, look, there are great things going on here. Let's lean into that even as we tackle some of the challenges. And that's what that just reminded me of Michael, is something that we're trying to work on as well.
Randy, any opportunity for Randy's picks to come back?
Well, what's interesting is it morphed into the Downtown Tucson Partnerships email.
Yep.
And so once it morphed into that, I was very happy to birth that. And but when I'm mayor, I will be the key cheerleader for everything going on all around Tucson, because I think that is really what makes us so special. That we have in spades.
So for our listeners, how do they get access to that newsletter?
If you go to downtowntucson.org on the website there, you can click to sign up for the Downtown Tucson Partnership newsletter.
And Lindsay, if we have a business person that would like to be a mentor, or you have a young professional that would like to serve on Emerging Leaders Council, how do they find out about that?
So you need to visit the Metro Chamber website, look under Emerging Leaders Council, and the application is open year round. They also have contact information for you to get in touch with us if you're interested in being a mentor.
Zach, Tucson Young Professionals, tell us a little bit more.
.com.
There you go.
Tucson, just be clear, that's on the end of Tucson Young Professionals, not Learn More, but TucsonYoungProfessionals.com. And we onboard throughout the year, and go check us out, and you can see our rates, what we're up to, everything like that.
And if you'd like any more information about my campaign, you can go to RandyForMayor.com. Randy with an I.
Final comments, Mr. Guyman.
Well, you know, I don't want to speak for all millennials, because I'm not a millennial. But I would certainly say that this conversation has been very positive in the sense of comments made related to you can launch an idea quickly here. There's lots to do here. I appreciate your point, Randy, about how we need to continue revitalizing downtown. That is, and I love the stat that you threw out, we're one third there. So we got a lot of work yet to do, and you know, let's roll up our sleeves and get that work done. And then, you know, just really tackling some of those educational issues that we talked about, I think is important. So lots of fun stuff, Amber. We get to boil the ocean again.
This is Amber Smith, President and CEO of the Tucson Metro Chamber, closing us here at Business Radio X Studio at Stuart Title on Broadway in Tucson, Arizona. We'll talk to you guys next month.
Thanks, Amber.
Thank you.